better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
Well, hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. It's always one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't, today is Thursday, September the 5th, 2024, as the Ass Clown Circus heats up and we head into the election in, what, 60-something days or something like that, where we will choose between an orange man and a total clown. But we are not going to talk about really that at all today. A little bit maybe from Ron Paul and Chris Rossini, but it's really not about the election. It's about, well, the screwed up nature of our society in general and this fantasy that the government is there to protect you and that that is the role of government, to protect you. No, the role of government is to protect liberty, and then you are to protect yourself as long as your liberty is protected. That's how government should function if we're going to have one at all. And the way they're coming at this is if you want to restrain corporate power, creating alphabet agencies funded by corporations and voted on by congressmen who are funded by corporations is probably not the way to do it. No, a free market. A free market was what would prevent corporations from, you know, having the dominance and control in our lives that they do. You know, well, the people that make Cheerios probably shouldn't be putting Cheerios at the top of the recommended foods list. That would be a start. So they're going to talk about that a little bit. Andy McCann will say, is there really any miracle food that can help with weight loss? And his recommendation is the pickle. And it's really not a miracle food. I like where he's coming from with this. I will have to correct something that he got sort of kind of wrong as far as the caloric value of the pickle, because they're not really zero calories. It's if you make the serving size, well, we'll get to it when we get to it. But the advice itself is sound on that. Dr. Ken Berry will talk about what is adrenal fatigue. Guy goes to the doctor, gets in a diagnosis. You have adrenal fatigue. Is that even a thing? Probably not. And Ken will explain in a very brief but accurate answer. Carrie Brown will talk about foraging some common plants and what you can do with them. I really like this segment from Carrie, and it brought back some memories of my childhood. One of the plants he mentions, they exist here, but I don't find it very often. But in Pennsylvania, they grow on every old coal stripping bank there is, and we sure use them for a lot of things, including some of the things he mentions. What is it? You will have to wait to find out. Then Sean Mills will talk about adding a pressure tank to a solar irrigation system so that it will put up enough PSI to work drippers reliably. That's a good one. Ken Daniels will talk about some unique recipes for those on the carnivore diet. I'll have a little pitch in on that one, and I will give you a little more info on the fact that Ken will be here at TSP 24 as one of our presenters when we have that segment. And I'm going to talk about something where I'm actually going to do an unannounced live stream. Some of you may have found it because when you put it out, but it probably won't start. I set it to start like 12:30. It's probably going to start about 30 minutes from now, which will be 10:40, 10:50, something like that. Recently, your Ass Clown Society, known as the Government Alphabet Agency of the DOJ, they needed to protect us from Russian disinformation, and they found out there's Russian-owned fake media companies. They're not fake media companies. They're Russian-owned media companies. They're not fake just because they're Russian, but anyway, they've been paying people to do, you know, content, and turns out one of the most well-known podcasters that we have, Tim Pool, was signed by one of these Russian fake media companies. Now, they're as real as any media company. Now, if you want to say they're fake, then so is CNN and Fox News and MSNBC, and I'm fine with that. But let's not pretend otherwise. I'm not going to pick on Tim. There's idiots out there saying things like, Tim Pool's going to jail now. Tim Pool is listed as a fucking victim in the damn documents. If you had read them, if you have the IQ, people saying that probably do not have the IQ to read beyond an eighth grade level and understand what they're looking at. But he's listed as a victim. I'm not here to kick Tim today, but I will point out that Tim Pool was absolutely nobody just 5 years ago. And all of a sudden, he's got a studio, and he's got all these engineers working for him, and a whole staff, and he's getting guests from, you know, is that just because he's really good? No. See, I've been doing this 16 years, and I have had several offers to do this type of thing and many other offers to do something that's kind of an in-between. And what I'm going to talk about today in my segment is why I advise you, if you become a podcaster, to stay 100% independent. And what I've said to people who have made offers to me, and I'm going to tell you the exact kind of offer, and this is firsthand knowledge. I'm going to tell you the exact kind of offer when you start to really come up in the podcast space, how they make the offer. I'm going to give you verbatim one of the offers that was made to me at least 12 years ago. And I told them to go, well, F themselves in the A, right, with a rusted cheese grater, which is just one of the things that I say when I really want people to understand where I'm coming from. I also had plenty of offers like to be on Doomsday Preppers and shit like that and told them all to shove that up their asshole too. And there's reasons, but I'm going to focus just on what they do to podcasters and why once you take that deal, you're nothing but an extension of the very thing that you claim to be opposing. Let me put it another way. Imagine you go to a rock concert, right? And the lead guitarist is a podcaster, okay? And the bank of speakers, you know, the huge speaker banks that, like, make your ears feel like they're going to fall out your butt when they crank it all the way up. And, all right, imagine the speakers saying they disagree with the lead guitarist and the lead guitarist claiming to disagree with the speakers. The speakers, of course, are the mainstream media. That's what's really going on here, and there's more to it than that, and I'm going to lay it out for you today, and I am going to do it as a live stream, not so much for the purpose of live stream, because it gets it up as a video, and I think this might be one that can be beneficial to people long term, as we have tons of people in this audience that are you know, scratching into, clawing into, building into the podcast space. And I will tell you that if you take the deal, if it comes, you will have more money, but you'll lose something that you really can't afford to lose if you really want to be a podcaster. With that, let's go ahead and jump on into it and hear from Chris Rossini and Dr. Ron Paul today on how free markets are how you actually restrain corporate power. The exact opposite of what you've been taught. Imagine that.
FDA authorizes new COVID-19 vaccine without clinical data. I thought there was a problem with the last time. People died because they didn't do it. So here, and they're bragging about this. But, you know, what they're doing is lining up a couple bucks, and they're ready to bring that up. Why do they exist? Why does the FDA exist? Well, the pretense to the people is that they're to protect us. They're to protect our health. They're to take care of us, which is a nonsense. That shouldn't be the reason we have governments. The government should protect our liberties so we can take care of ourselves.
That's right, Dr. Paul. And if you ask the average American, they really do believe that these federal agencies are there to protect us from the corporations. And it's the ultimate trick, because it's really the corporations that are doing the regulating. You know, they're on these, the FDA, they come from Pfizer, they come from, so what has happened is we've given the corporations the power of the state. We've given them the ability to use force via the government, the exact opposite of the free market. But Americans believe that, no, you need the FDA. Otherwise, the corporations, they'll do whatever they want to us. No, they are doing whatever they want to us with the FDA. And, you know, they're calling this another vaccine without clinical trials. Everybody knows. You know, I have people tell me all the time that I know they took the vaccine. They're like, you know, that wasn't a vaccine. I don't know what they gave me. But this is what Americans have been conditioned to believe that we need. And it's, you know, it's the worst thing. You've given corporations who are driven by money, not necessarily, you know, in any way that they can get, the power of the state behind them.
People will say, well, if the government doesn't do it, who's going to do it? Well, if nobody did it, it'd be a lot better than with the government doing it, because they make things worse. But the whole thing is there would be private organizations that would be credible, because you know they would do this research, and their reputation would depend on giving correct advice. And there'd probably be two or three groups like this doing it. And for a service like that, and information that you finally found somebody that you could trust, you could pay them some money to get information, because it would be so much more valuable with than the government telling us what to do.
Dr. Paul, that is such a great point. We can have private, you know, like Consumer Reports and any, you know, any derivatives of that. They would have a much different incentive than what the government has. The FDA lied to everybody, and they're cranking out another vaccine. What they're calling a vaccine. That's another lie. And there is no recourse. Nobody gets fired. Nobody cares. We're just going to ignore it. And that's it. But a private organization, you're going to go out of business. You don't get taxpayer money. You're out of business. You lie to everybody, and you're out. Nobody's going to trust you again. The government, they just keep taking taxpayer money. So you're not going to stop that. And they'll just keep lying, and you're not going to do anything about it. The only thing you can do is stop believing them. You know, it's the best you can do. Stop believing them. Don't listen to them, which most people are doing. They don't go get these jabs anymore. We need to remove the power of the state from the corporations. And there's only one way to do that. There's one road, and that is free markets. And those two words put together scare people in our day. They didn't scare people before, but they scare people in our day. They will think, oh, my goodness, free markets, that means corporations, they'll be able to do whatever they want. I feel safer with the USDA and the FDA and the CDC. I feel safer, even though I'm not. I feel it because I've been told that this is right. But it's, you know, it's the opposite. And that's why we're suffering, and we're going to keep suffering until the power of the state can no longer be wielded by corporations. And the number one opponent of the idea of free markets is the corporations. They love this. They have the power now. You know, they get subsidies. They get our tax. We go to work, we pay taxes, and it goes right to them. They create laws to crush little guys. You know, have you noticed that in every single industry, everything is being consolidated and centralized around these big corporations, and the little guys just get crushed, you know, with laws, with licensing. You need a license to do everything. Well, who do you think is behind that? It's to keep you out. You go and you labor for the big corporations. That's the only choice that's going to be available to you. And the corporations had a chance several times. You know, Ron Paul ran for president. He's for free markets. Do you know how many of the big corporations supported him? Zero. They do not want free markets. They do not want you to want free markets, because that will diminish and destroy their power to wield the state against all of us.
So, you know, I'm big on analogies to help people grasp things, especially when they've been programmed to not grasp them. Because this idea that the FDA makes your food safe is ridiculous, it's preposterous, and it makes absolutely no logical sense whatsoever that in any way the current structure of the United States federal government, and the FDA in particular, would make the box of Cheerios you eat safer. It's nonsense. But here's a way to understand it, because it's so hard for many people to break that. Well, of course it's true. I mean, I was told that my whole life. It's called the Food and Drug Administration, and why would they help Pfizer, or why would they help Cheerios or Nabisco or whatever hurt us? It's their job to keep us safe. All right. So I want you to understand that the reason you believe that you need to be kept safe from the people that make the food and the drugs is because you're right. You do need to be kept safe. I'm just saying the government's not the one to do it. All right, so I want to ask you an honest question here. Really be honest with your answer. If you wanted to control people, and I was willing to offer you guns to do it with, or money to do it with, and you're not going into a single building to, like, rob a diamond or something to keep everybody, I get why you'd pick guns for that. You have to operate long-term in society. Do you want guns or money? if you're smart, you want guns and money. I understand that. But for the control part, you want guns to defend yourself, and you want for control, you want money. Meaning that money is more powerful than the gun in our world, okay? I can get more done with money than I can with guns. I have plenty of guns. I can't go out and make society change with those guns. All I'm going to do is get my ass shot, okay? But the people you're dealing with are murderers. So would you hand the people that already have a gun and want to murder you ammunition? No, you would not do that, would you? Okay, so they already have an intent to do harm, and they do. Okay, they absolutely have an intent to do harm. And they have lots of money. They have lots of money to buy influence and channel influence. So that's the gun. The money is the gun, but the gun has no bullets in it until you add the apparatus of regulation. When you give the giant food corporations and the giant drug corporations a huge organization like the FDA, you handed them ammunition for their gun. There's a place now to put their money, to have much greater influence. Like Cheerios can only convince you that they're good for your baby so much by running commercials saying it and putting a fake doctor on there saying it, okay? But if they can get the Federal Drug Administration to say, we certify this, now they have a lot more. Now just take that and you get the government to like mandate certain vaccinations, mandate certain medications, and more importantly, run interference on anything that will compete with what you want. And then we'll call that capitalism in a free market and say it failed. So we need more socialism, which is socialism created the problem because you put the bullets in the gun of the person that was pointing the gun at you. Now, no one wants a gun pointed at them, but if I give you a choice, you can have a guy point a gun at you and threaten you with it, but you know there's no bullets in the gun. Or he can have a fully locked and loaded 100-round magazine and a shitload of them more on his chest, and you ain't got a gun. That's a dumb choice. Of course, give the guy an empty gun. I'll take it from him and beat his ass with it like a club. But no, we're going to load him up to protect yourself. That's how preposterous this is if you understand how the FDA works, which is they are funded by the people that they claim they're regulating. He who holds the money holds the power. Why? If I'm giving you money, in the words of a very famous British philosopher and statesman from the 1800s, and his name escapes me right now, the hand doing the giving is always in control because it's always held higher than the one doing the receiving. But go ahead and think that the alphabet agencies protect you, because that makes sense in some fantasy world you live in. Anyway, moving on, let's hear about Miracle Diet Food from Andy McCann.
Hello and good afternoon. This is Andy McCann coming to you from Woodstock, Georgia and CrossFit Garage. And I got a question here. Danny with an I from Tennessee asks, is there a miracle food to help me lose weight? I know this isn't supposed to be hard and it's just math, but habits and cravings are tough to beat. I guess I'm really just asking for general help. So, hey, no, that's good. And actually, I should have brought this up a long time ago. There is a miracle food, kind of, and it comes with a kind of some drawbacks, but it does help with the cravings and it does help with breaking some habits. So I'm going to get into that for you. And it's the pickle, right? So if you look at the back of the container on a pickle, you're going to see that even if you consume the entire jar, it's going to have 0 calories. Actually, let me pull that up and then I'm going to read it off to you. So that wasn't easy. I should be better on the internet. I guess at 50, I still can't type the right things in when I search. But I did find the Mount Olives pickles that you see at pretty much every grocery store. So this is the amazing thing about a pickle. You look at this and it says number of servings, and then you go down, calories per serving, 0. Total fat, 0. Total carbohydrates, 0. Total proteins, actually carbohydrates is 0.5. But there's pretty much nothing. The bad part about the pickle is how much sodium's in it. So there's a couple ways to kind of get around this. One, you should be working out anyway. So if you're working out, eat the pickle, go work out. Don't add salts to anything anymore ever, because you're going to be getting so much salt, especially if you buy them like this. So the pickle is the answer. It's actually, you know what? I did a podcast called, what did I call it? I pulled it up here. It's called On How to Stop Consuming Sugar. And one of the big pieces of advice there was to punch your habits and cravings in the face with a different taste. And that different taste is something like a pickle. It could be anything, but pickles are great because it's just not what you expect. And it'll help dissociate some of those things. But the pickle, besides the taste, it's the nutrition facts. It's a cucumber with stuff, right? So in here it says the ingredients for this, the Mount Olives ones, is a cucumber, water, vinegar, salt, calcium chloride, sodium. So it's more salt, sodium benz. I can't say most of the stuff. Natural flavors, which is hey anything we want to put in it, and then some other thing that I can't say. It of course yellow dye number 5. But you can learn to actually make pickles on your own and remove some of the things. Now, I hate to garden, but Jack, I need you to kind of back me up on this, or not back me up, but tell people how easy it is to grow cucumbers. So I actually threw some seeds in our raised garden bed that I hate to garden out of. I put some chicken gates over it, so just basically some gates that I had made for chickens not getting out, so that stuff could climb out and crawl through. And I tapped in a water line that was flushing we're on a well, so it has a flush system. Anyway, I flushed that water into the garden, and I don't like gardening, so it just does its own little thing. And the only thing really growing are the cucumbers. So I've got tons of cucumbers. They are so easy to grow that even this idiot can grow cucumbers. Jack, how easy is it to grow cucumbers? Anyway, grow your own cucumbers and learn to pickle. Maybe you could talk about that. I am not the pickle guy. I don't know how to make them. I hate doing extra, and I'm willing to pay for things. So when money will solve it, it's not a problem. Just go buy pickles, right? Now, you could go to Publix or your local grocery store, pick up Mount Olive pickles, and you're going to get high sodium. You could learn to make pickles on your own, and that would be the way to go because, one, it's not that hard, and two, you can control what you're putting into it. Yes, there's still going to be salt, but you could come up with other variations, and I'm sure if you research it, you can find ways to have like really low sodium pickles. But here's the thing. It's not just the pickle. It's you get crunch if you want to, if you make it the right way. You can get garlic. You can get dill. You can get cinnamon. I mean, whatever. Your imagination is the limit when it comes to creating the pickle that you want. So you can make them taste whatever the way you want them to taste. And that's the trick there. One, the pickle doesn't have any like nutritional like anything to it besides sodium. So it's a great, I'm just going to eat it. And you can almost eat as much of the disease as you want. Now, I wouldn't do that, but you can. And put it in, like, I need to eat something. Great. Go eat some pickles. I need to eat something different. Great. Create different pickles that taste different. Again, garlic, dill, whatever. It doesn't matter. You can go buy these online. You can go to a new Whole Foods and pay extra for them. But I think you can make this on your own and do it cheaper and just eat pickles. So I did a quick search on the miracle food pickle, and everyone was talking about it. So, yeah, people know about it. I guess maybe we don't know about it in general. But it's not hard to use it. It's easy to find, and you can make it on your own. And then you did say... what are some general like help, like throw me a life preserver so or life ring or whatever. Here's what I would tell you when you're trying to lose weight. Jack's got it right. I do the same thing. I pretty much eat just meat and vegetables, and that's pretty much it. It's kind of boring, but it does do the job. And typically it's calories in, calories out. But I think when you do like we're doing, it changes the math a bit. I don't know why, but it does. So I eat a lot of meat and fat, and it doesn't make me fat. So the math isn't quite normal. If you're doing the regular system, then yeah, you need to control the amount in, the amount out, of course, and it needs to be below whatever your number is. So some people, like, let's say it's 1700 is your calorie count just to keep you alive. Great. Sometimes you can go too low and your body goes into feast or famine. So it's the famine time and it starts shutting down processes, which isn't good. Sometimes actually eating 2000 calories is the way to go because your body picks back up and it actually does the thing it's supposed to, basically increasing your metabolic rate. That's for you to figure out. I don't really like working with people on that, especially remote. Find somebody to help you with that. There's experts out there. You can just pay them, hire a mentor. You'll get there faster. But the key there is on the habits is to understand the habit loop and then punch it in the face. And usually it's going to be eat something different, like a pickle, right? It's just a great way to go. So I think, yeah, miracle food, do it. Jack, what do you think?
So can something be true and false at the same time? Yes, it can, and I'm about to explain how. Some of you already know. We've talked about this here and there before. when you look at something like a jar of Mount Olive pickles and it says serving size, it'll say something like 4 slices or 4 pieces or something like that. And it'll say calories equal zero, carbs equal zero. So as soon as we get to zero carbs or zero calories, then there have to be zero carbs, fat, and protein. There have to be. There's no way that you're going to have a carbohydrate and not have a calorie, or have a protein gram and not have a calorie. Like the calories come in one of 3 macros: fat, protein, carbohydrate. Okay. But the federal government, and this is why I put this as the second segment today, says that if your serving size has less than one of a thing, you can put zero, right up to like 0.9. So what they do to make a zero-calorie food that you can eat all you want of is they make that serving size, because the person that makes the jar can call a serving size 1 piece or 4 pieces or 1 ounce or the half a jar. Whatever they say is the serving size is the serving size. So if you got 4 thin slices of cucumber, which all a pickle is a cucumber, pickling it doesn't change anything unless it's like sweet and sour pickles, and then it's going to have more carbohydrate, and you got to play the game a little harder, maybe to get it down to 1 or something like that, 1 calorie. But if it's just vinegar has basically nothing, especially the amount that's still going to be on the pickle and in the pickle. So you're going to get about the same amount of calories as you do from a cucumber, okay? There's no magic because you pickle. So if you were to eat about a half a cup of cucumber, right, which should be a reasonable serving size, a half cup's not much, you get about 8 calories. A cup is then 16 calories, and it's almost all carbohydrate. Now, there's not much carbohydrate there. It's a very small amount, and it's not going to jack up your low-carb diet. Cucumbers and pickles are one of the greatest things. I agree with Andy on the recommendation of the food, but what I want you to understand is that the zero-calorie thing is the truth and a lie mixed together. It's an exact example of the agency that's protecting you, not protecting you. And you could find this information. It's not hard. You can put calories in a cucumber into any search engine and very quickly ascertain the information I just gave you, and therefore you can go confirm it. A large cucumber, if you eat the whole thing, has around 45 calories. And if you're counting carbohydrate, you can go figure that out too. A 1 cup of cucumber will have about 3.8 grams of carbohydrate, but only about 2.5 grams net, because a significant portion, over a little bit over a gram of that 3.8, is actually fiber. And in Ken Berry's words, you can trust broccoli, and you can also trust cucumbers. You can trust whole foods with the fiber component. Now, when they use wheat fiber or some bullshit they make up to make a tortilla and call it low carb, you can't trust that. That's crap. It's bullshit. It's starch. But it's not the kind of fiber that we're really talking about here. And every one of those products that I've watched, there's a guy named Steve, has a YouTube channel called Serious Keto. He's a boomer, and he's kind of an asshole to people who ask him any question about anything that he perceives as being an attack. He's really a dick about it. He acts like a child, honestly. My point is, he does good content, and he uses a continuous glucose monitor. And every single time I have seen him test, like, low-carb tortillas, low-carb, like, all of that shit, huge insulin spikes, in some instances worse than the regular product. But you can trust broccoli, you can trust cucumbers. There's nothing wrong with what Andy's saying here, but if you ate enough, you would still be getting some carbohydrate and some calories. And it's just a deception, and it's important to know. And the reason it's important to know is because it's not just about pickles. You know, you can go out and get like some kind of mince in a tin, not Altoids, because they end up with 1, I've checked, but like, you know, maybe a smaller version of an Altoid, and it would be like, you know, 0.8 calories. It'll all say zero per serving, one piece. If it says zero, just move all the numbers to 1 or look up the underlying ingredient and do the calculation. All right, moving on. But I'll say this about, like, why not just eat cucumber then? Because pickles are self-limiting and they slow you down and you feel like you ate more than you did. That's one of the reasons for it. I also think if you do them lacto-fermented, they have other health benefits. Moving on, let's hear about adrenal fatigue from Ken Berry. And this will be a very short and Gruffy can't answer.
Hello, Jack Spearco and all the TSP crew. This is Dr. Ken Berry today answering a question from Cynthia. Cynthia writes, Dr. Berry, what is your opinion on adrenal fatigue? My husband has a mechanical heart valve and is having some other heart-related issues. We don't know exactly what yet, but his last visit to his doctor said that the lab work showed adrenal fatigue. Quick search on the internet, and some doctors say it's not a thing at all. Okay, Cynthia, adrenal fatigue is not a real medical diagnosis. There is no ICD-10 code for this. No reputable doctor ever says the words, oh, you have a diagnosis of adrenal fatigue. Now, you can have low adrenal hormones like DHEA and cortisol, but that doesn't mean you have adrenal fatigue. So you probably saw a naturopathic doctor or an allopathic doctor trying to mimic a naturopathic doctor. This is an ignorant statement on a doctor's part and should be a red flag for you to maybe get a second opinion. He definitely needs to follow up with the cardiologist because of the heart valve issues. But yes, there's no such thing as adrenal fatigue as a medical diagnosis. Hope this helps. Talk to you guys next time.
You know, Ken says it was probably like a, you know, somebody that's in like Washington State where naturopathic NDs are legal or something. I bet this is a regular MD that said this. I'm not even surprised, but I also agree with Ken 100% on his answer. Let's move on and talk to Sean Mills about pressure tank for a solar irrigation system.
Hey everybody, it's Sean Mills with Hack My Homestead, and today I've got a question from Doug in Idaho. Doug says, how do I add a pressure tank to a solar irrigation system? I currently have an irrigation system for an orchard berry setup using standard drip irrigation from Lowe's/Home Depot. It's a very young orchard at about 2.5 years old, and we tend to have fairly dry summers here in North Idaho. The orchard has no access to plumbed water or power, and I need to irrigate for about 3 months in the height of summer, and then minimally before and after that. The setup consists of a standard 25 PSI drippers set on a 1-inch supply line. I have a 1,300-gallon cistern irrigating about 25 trees and about 30 berry plants. It's using 200 watts of solar and a 24-volt 160-amp-hour battery system. The solar pump is a 24-volt Aquatech DDP550 with an open flow of about 4.3 gallons per minute at 60 PSI. The irrigation is divided into 6 circuits, each operating at a capacity of 72 gallons per hour per circuit, which only equates to 1.2 gallons per minute. The pump pressurizes fine, then chatters as it cycles on and off once it reaches the operating pressure and then drops with the irrigation. I find that when I run 2 circuits simultaneously, it cycles less but still chatters cycles every few seconds. So how do I add a pressure tank or switch to minimize the cycling and prevent burning out my pump? Does adding a pressure tank make sense? Does it have to be hardwired with an inverter, or is there a passive pressure switch that can be used? Is there a DC compatible solution? My research has shown pressure regulators for RVs and sailboats would be woefully inadequate, as they are designed for 1 to 2 gallons max and only seem to apply for washing your hands and not a continuous irrigation system pumping about 300 gallons 2 to 3 times a week. Not sure if it helps, but here are pics of the system. So he sent me some pictures and mentions some more details about how he's tried to minimize restrictions to flow, and he's got some bypass switches and stuff like that. So the idea is that he needs to create an amount of pressure to make the drip irrigation work, but not so much back pressure in the lines that he actually has his pump reaching its set cutout pressure, which is causing it to turn off, and then the pressure drops because the water is flowing out, and then it gets back on, and so on, off, on, off, on, off. And you end up destroying your pump when you do that. Excuse me. So there's a couple options here. So for me, I like the way he's got this system set up. And so what I would do is add a pressure relief valve below the cutout limit for the pump and have that push water back into the cistern. So here's what that would look like. All of his existing plumbing remains the same, except for he puts a T anywhere in the system, wherever it makes sense, closer to the cistern would mean less pipe. He puts a T in, and from that T, he runs a pipe over to his cistern. He puts a pressure relief valve there. You can buy adjustable pressure relief valves. And if the pump is rated for 60 PSI, and I think he said he only needed like 20-something in order, 25 PSI in order for the drippers to work, I'd probably pick something around 40. So I would say, okay, at 40 PSI, this pressure relief valve is going to open, and it's going to put water back into the cistern, right? So then we're just creating a loop. And what that allows you to do is maintain about 40 PSI in the system, which means all the emitters are going to work properly at the, you know, irrigation site. But we're never going to hit that 60 PSI that causes the pump to kick off, okay? And so to me, that's the simplest solution. You just prevent the pump from ever getting to 60 PSI and cutting off. And obviously the water that is releasing the pressure that allows that to happen just goes right back into the cistern. And so I think that's the easiest thing to do. Depending on how you're actually capturing that water, if you've got silt or sediment buildup in the bottom of that tank, you might want to look at doing something where you're bringing the water in from the pressure relief valve and then down and, you know, bring a pipe down and then back up with a U so that you're not putting water directly on that sediment layer and causing it to stir up, which obviously would cause problems for both the pump and the drip emitters. So that would be the option that I would use with DC. You don't want to use a pressure switch pressure switch with DC. So a pressure switch has a set on and a set off PSI. What happens is that when your system drops to the set on PSI, it kicks the pump on. It closes the circuit and the pump comes on. And then when it hits that high mark, it cuts back off. And those you typically use with a air bladder tank or another pressure tank so that you're pressurizing the system, but you've got a reservoir of pressurized water in the tank so that when you're running the water, you have what's called drawdown. So you've got a certain number of gallons you can pull out of the system before you get to that set on pressure and the pump kicks back on. Now, the problem is that DC can actually maintain an arc much better than AC power does. And so with DC, even if your switch kicks off, you can still have an arc that'll run across those contacts, and it can create problems for the pump. It can burn up the contacts. It's just not great, and it's expensive. You have to spend a lot more money to buy a DC-rated pressure switch, and even then, it's still going to fail. So if you want a DC solution, I think releasing the pressure before you get to the cutout point on the pump, your pump will run longer per irrigation cycle, right? But it won't cycle as much. So you won't have that on, off, on, off, on, off, which destroys the pump over time. It'll kick on. It'll run for longer than it currently is to get your irrigation done. But then after that, you don't have the problem. And so that's kind of what's happening. You mentioned that when you've got two irrigation lines running at the same time, the pump cycles less. Well, the reason for that is that you got more water exiting the system. So therefore, your pressure isn't building up as fast. And so this is doing the same thing as that with a little bit of pipe, a pressure relief valve, and probably a new pump. You mentioned that your current pump is probably burnt out. But that allows you to do it without adjusting the system. And then very quickly, the other option would be putting an inverter on your 24-volt battery bank and running a 120-volt pump with a pressure switch and a pressure tank. You're still going to have cycles, though. If you're running 300 gallons through there, even a big, like, $1,000 air bladder tank set at 30 to 50 PSI on the switch, you're still going to end up running that pump. You know, it's going to turn on. It's going to drop about 50 to 60 gallons out of the system. Then it's going to turn back on. So it's still going to cycle five or six times with every 300-gallon irrigation cycle. So that would be an option if you really wanted to use the bladder tank. Again, that adds a couple additional failure points in the system. Now you're adding the pressure switch, you're adding the tank, and you're adding the inverter. I think a better solution would just be to add a pressure relief valve to the existing 24-volt system once you've changed the pump out. And then for the price of one pressure tank, you could buy a couple extra pumps and just have them on hand in case you had a problem. So that's what my suggestion is, Doug. Good luck to you, and hoping that answers your question and gets you going on your irrigation.
All right, up next, I got relatively new member of the expert council, Carrie Brown, talking about some common plants and you can forage and what you can do with them once you find them. And like I said, there's a bit of a throwback in this one for me to my childhood in rural Pennsylvania.
Hey, TSP community. It's Carrie Brown from Strong Roots Resources, and today I'm bringing you two species worth foraging that currently are available in much of the United States. So, first is going to be the edible sumac, and there's several types available. The one I'm going to discuss here is winged sumac, but there is also smooth sumac and staghorn sumac. You can use all of these in the way I'm fixing to describe. These shrubs, which get to be about 15 feet tall, set clusters of deep red berries, and I use them to make what we call sumac aid, which is a tangy, refreshing drink that's brewed like sun tea. So you can think of it as similar to pink lemonade, but without all the toxic manufactured ingredients. When you gather these berries, just clip off the entire cluster and steep in some water for a few hours. So I usually do it for about 6 hours out in the sunshine in some kind of glass jar. You can play around with the amount of berries per gallon of water. I usually go with about 4 large clusters per gallon for a pretty robust flavor. You don't want to boil the water. That's going to result in tannins from the stems being transferred, and it'll just get bitter. So park them in there. Sunshine, water, glass vessel, 4 to 6 hours, and I kind of taste test as we go along. I've played around with it quite a bit to see in terms of how soon I've harvested the berries versus harvesting them later, and just kind of playing around with that flavor profile. Then you can just apply a little bit of your sweetener of choice and enjoy. So over time, and with rainfall, the berries will begin to lose their flavor. Though it's not uncommon to find berries still worth using in late fall and even early winter, a lot of the times they will remain on the stem. Sometimes the birds pick them off, but often you'll find intact clusters, even in early winter time. If they're still a little bit oily to the touch, they still have some flavor. So that can kind of be your test as to whether they're worth harvesting or not. I've got a small stand of these on the downhill kind of eastern portion of my food forest that I've designed a lot of the food forest around, since they're a good fit as a shrubby hedge. So this is important to note. All red sumac berries are edible. Poisonous sumac berries are always white. And these shrubs that result in that kind of dermatitis similar to poison ivy are generally found in wetter locations. Edible sumacs, in my experience, are found in dry locations. So just be certain of what you're interacting with when you're out foraging these berries. The second plant I want to cover is the Japanese, also known as the Kusa dogwood. This cultivar is pretty common in conventionally planted landscapes, and they've got the bonus of providing a very tasty fruit. Now, our native dogwoods here do not produce an edible fruit, so make that distinction. The kusas are, a lot of people like them because they're not prone to some of the diseases that affect the native dogwoods, but they can be planted in similar conditions, and they have a bit more of a tapered shape and less kind of spread out and branchy as compared to the native dogwoods. So the entire fruit is edible. So although sometimes the outer portion is a little bit bitter, the inside often has no seeds or only just very small ones, and has this kind of soft, custard-like flavor, more pithy than juicy. I know how that sounds, but that's a good thing. They're good, trust me. I was recently working on a customer's property, and her CUSA were just loaded down with fruit. And it reminded me that I need some of these trees in my food forest. They're excellent, excellent trees. So there's a good chance you got neighbors who have CUSA dogwoods and maybe even have no idea how tasty that fruit is. So maybe there's a deal to be struck there. I've also seen them planted around shopping centers, commercial spaces. And the nice thing is that they can be propagated from softwood cuttings kind of in mid-spring. I've added a link from Gardening Know-How on how to do that, because these trees, when bought as mature trees, can be pretty expensive. So I've sent links to Jack so you guys can read up further on these species. And if you'd like to learn more about the wild medicinal, edible, and otherwise useful species on your land, I offer in-person property walks, foraging classes, consulting, and education, as well as identification, GPS tagging, and documentation of those species on your property. I travel within about 4 hours of Knoxville, Tennessee, so feel free to reach out to me via strongrootsresources@gmail.com to discuss the options I've got available. Y'all have a good week, and we'll talk to you next time.
So of those two, you might guess that the one that was highly prevalent everywhere in rural Pennsylvania was sumac, and usually that was staghorn, and he's right. They're all, if it's red, it's good sumac to use, and they all are very similar. It's used a lot in the Middle East, too, a different variety that they grow over there, and they specifically grow it as a seasoning. And I'll tell you what we used to do beyond making a pink lemonade, which is really, really common. We used it a lot in cooking as well. It has a lot of ascorbic acid, and that's why it makes a lemonade or lemon-like citrusy flavor, is that ascorbic acid. It is one of the few sources of it that you can get in most temperate climates in abundance. Like I said, not that nothing has it, but a lot of it. That's something that sumac has in abundance. Sea berry is about the only thing else that I know that you think of as like a citrus of the north, if you want to call it that. And sea berry is difficult to grow compared to sumac. Sumac just grows all over, all by itself, and you don't have to deal with thorns to get it. And a lot of people do think it's poison, and they're going to get itchy. And the first time I ever brought some home and hung it up out in the shed, my grandfather had a heart attack about it. I was going to be covered in stuff and whatever. And then when it didn't happen, he said it's because I don't get poison ivy, which I don't. My father was deathly afraid of poison ivy, so I could run hiding it when I was a kid if I was in trouble. It'll roll around in it, too, so he wouldn't touch me. Anyway, I found out about this when I was in my, like, tweener years, I guess, on a TV show called Out the Door, out of Jacksonville, Florida, actually. It was a recommended Boy Scout thing to go out and gather this stuff and make this lemonade. And then that sent me down into a kind of a discovery of what you could do with it, because I was always into food, even as a kid. I liked to cook my own stuff. And since it's a citrus stand-in, it actually works really good in cooking things like fish. So once we discovered this, when we were doing things like throwing trout wrapped up in foil on the grill, we would just put a sprig of sumac inside the cavity of like a whole trout that had been gutted and then cook skin on. And it was delicious that way. But then, as I got older and I really got into culinary stuff, I started thinking, well, what else can you do with this? You dry it out. And he's right. If you just leave it out, it will begin to decline in flavor. But if you dry it properly, and so that would either be in a dry climate, you can just hang it up and dry it like an herb, or in any kind, the problem around here is when you can find some around here, it's really ripe about right now, and it's actually humid again. So you throw it in your lowest setting of like your Excalibur dehydrator or whatever dehydrator, and you dehydrate it. And when you do that, then you can knock those berries off. Like, you just get a clean bucket or something and knock the berries off the stems. You store those in a jar, and then you can use those as a flavoring. And I even have on T-Spice, if you don't want to go through all that or you don't have any around you, you can buy Middle Eastern sumac and do the same kind of thing I'm going to tell you about. It is a delicious seasoning. And one of my favorite things to do is carrot fries. So you cut carrots into sticks, and then you coat them with some either oil or tallow or some schmaltz or some whatever fat you want to use. And about the only fat that I use that's not a carnivore fat would be olive oil or coconut oil. Either one, any of them work. You're doing that mainly to get kind of an air fry going on in your oven. And to also get things to stick to the fries. So we give a nice coating of a fat to the fry, to the carrot fries. Salt, pepper if you want it, and sumac. Throw them in the oven until they are well baked. They're never going to be a fry, like a crispy fry or anything. But when they start to get a little bit of char in them, you develop the sugars in there, and you've got that sugar in the carrot going against the tartness of the sumac. And it's good on a lot of vegetables like that as well. And anything that you would use lemon or with some sort of sour citrus with, this stuff will work really good for. And that means that if you live in like the northeastern United States, you have the ability to basically have the same thing you get from a lemon tree for cooking anyway, growing all around you for free, and all you got to do is go out and get it. On the dogwood, I want to throw in another dogwood species, Cornus moss, in addition to the Coosa dogwoods that he's talking about. Cornus moss is a European, Southern Europe dogwood species, and they're also like known as Cornelian cherry. They were grown commercially in like the areas around Grecian islands and things like that hundreds of years ago. That's not so much true anymore. They still do it, but nowhere near the level they used to. I have them here. They're fantastic. They have no trouble getting through our winters, even when it goes below zero. The problem for them here is the heat. It's a little bit too hot. They don't thrive, but they live and they produce about every other year. Those are worth checking out, too. Again, they're called Cornelian cherry. The Latin name is Cornus moss, M-A-S, C-O-R-N-U-S-M-A-S. Let's move on, and now we are going to hear from Ken Daniels on carnivore recipes.
Hello, this is Ken with DrinkEatLearn.com. A topic came in from David, and he asks, can you suggest some unique carnivore recipes? I'm starting my journey with my carnivore diet, and to me there's nothing boring about a perfectly cooked ribeye. But I eat most of my meals at work, so I'm limited to a microwave, and on occasions I can access a propane grill. On my days off, I want to be able to share my meals with my wife, who is not carnivore, but loves her carb-filled side dishes. I know you, Dr. Barry, and others have some great recipes that would help add variety to my menu and maybe some recommendations for zero-carb side dishes to satisfy my wife's cravings. I do not have any limitations on ingredients other than being carb-free. Thank you, David. Thanks for the question, David. This is a hot topic here at DrinkEatLearn.com. I've been thinking about carnivore lifestyle for a few months now. I've got type 2 diabetes. I'm a freaking chef, and I even worry if I can keep my daily intake of meat varied enough to keep my soul as a food science geek happy. The reason this has been on my mind lately is I've started a project that's not quite ready yet, but it's going to be a site dedicated to my journey as a diabetic chef trying this carnivore lifestyle. Tons of recipes, personal updates about progress and failures, and techniques on how to keep things true to the plan, but also how to keep things interesting. It's not quite ready yet because I'm researching foods and R&Ding techniques. Let me know if anybody is interested in this, and I'll keep you posted. Okay, let's help David. David, it honestly boils down to how strict you are on the carnivore lifestyle. I cannot stress the importance over the techniques in food preparation versus recipe or seasonings. Don't be afraid to practice different techniques in food preparation. I can give you recipes and ideas, but the talent on YouTube University in regards to technique is immense. Use it. Learn how to cook proteins and varied techniques can help you not get burnt out on the same meats over and over. Practice builds confidence. Also, knowing technique is important when the quality of protein can be downgraded to a choice cut versus prime. This can save tons of money. An example of knowing many techniques to one ingredient, the egg. Many may think they know the full power of the egg. It could simply be the best ingredient in the kitchen. Mastering and practicing all the ways you can prepare eggs will greatly improve the variety of dishes available. This will definitely be on a future segment on the Expert Council. Okay, so let's get to some recipes. Japanese pork tonkatsu. Japanese traditional dish, broth that's made thick and creamy by using slowly rendered fat. If you're thinking ramen, yes, that's the name of the noodles, but we're not going to use them. Just add pork cutlets, shiitake mushrooms, and soft-boiled eggs. If you're a purist, just cut out what you need to fit into your carnivore plan. It can be as simple as broth and meat, but knowing the technique adds a creamy texture. It's easy to microwave, great for winter days. This dish, I believe, would be great for even the non-carnies. The wife could add some bok choy or a very small portion of the ramen egg noodles. Two, Scotch eggs 50-50. Soft-boiled eggs wrapped in a 50% ground beef, 50% ground bacon. Breaded with a mix of protein whey powder to keep it bonded, egg wash, and crushed pork rinds. Bake. And by the time you bake and then repeat, reheat in the microwave, it's perfect for lunch, but traditionally served cold. I'd recommend a glass of Guinness for the wife as a side dish. Next, we've got a Creole crawfish egg salad topped with dried micro shrimp. Basically, make a beef tallow mayo, add some Old Bay, celery salt, smoked paprika, obviously cooked crawfish tails, and if you've got the head, scoop out the mix inside. Hard-boiled eggs, and then mix up the tallow. Top with your dried micro shrimps for a bit of crunch. Just so everyone knows, I'm addicted to carbs. Admitting this is the first step. So I added what I would consider a mildly carnivore dessert. And if you're zero carb focused, then this is definitely a no-go. But if you have a few carbs to spare, this might help curb a craving. It's an adaptation of a creme brulee that I've made in the past. It's called the Earl Grey Egg Custard, topped with frozen butter infused with lime zest. So basically, I steep Earl Grey in a bit of heavy cream and egg yolk, cook it slowly to thicken, no sugar. I let it cool in small dishes. I make a compound butter with lime zest. I freeze the butter, and then I grate the frozen butter over the dish to serve. It's absolutely fabulous. Lastly, let's talk tea. Again, if you're a purist, then some say no tea. However, black tea has loads of tannins. As a sommelier, I use tannins in red wine a lot. Tannins naturally bond to fat molecules on your tongue and lessen the richness of fatty foods. At times, when having just meat over and over and fat can cause fatigue on your palate, a strong, sugarless black tea, ice cold or hot, can help wash those fats away and keep you hungry for more meat. David, I'm learning right along with you. Even as a chef, I may get some of these principles of carnivore wrong, but I will keep learning. Jack definitely has the practice of eating carnivore. Dr. Barry has the medical knowledge. I'm honored to give you my advice as a food science geek and chef. I hope some of these ideas helped, and good luck. Until next time, this is Ken Daniels with DrinkEatLearn.com. Cheers.
All right, so that's good advice there. I really don't have anything to add. I will say this. There is this desire that some people have when they go into the carnivore space to be a purist. But some people will not use anything on their food unless it is pure carnivore or maybe salt. Like, they won't even use something like black pepper or sage or something like that. If you want to do it, man, this is a free society, in my opinion. I know the government has problems with that, but we have to live free anyway. And if whatever you want, you should do. As an advisor, though, I would say I think that there can be too much of certain things, and people can become obsessed with them. They say, but it works. Yeah, but would it have worked anyway if you would have had some broccoli yesterday? And the answer is probably so. And every time I talk to Ken, and I am sold on low-carb living. You don't have to sell me on it at all. But I always say this, and he always says, yeah, I think you're right, okay? And that is that there's something going on here beyond just carbohydrates. Humans have been eating carbohydrates for as long as there's been humans. And I also think on some level we've been overeating carbohydrates for as long as we've been able to manufacture them through agriculture. And we eat them at levels that would never occur without an industrialized process. And that doesn't necessarily mean modern industrial. I'm not Egyptians industrialized the process. The energy input they used was slaves. Okay? If you had to operate as a human native to this planet without industrialized agriculture, harvesting, etc., you would never consume the volume of carbohydrates, especially year-round, that people do today. Okay. The other side of it, though, is I go back to the 70s in my head and go onto the beach, and there was no fat people, or like one fat person. And the fat person then is like, that's a little chubby today, is how we look at it. And people ate lots of potatoes and lots of rice, but what they didn't eat was 17 syllabic word additives in their food. Seed oils were largely shunned. They had just started the push to get seed oils into our food, and I think they're the biggest problem. High fructose corn syrup didn't become mainstream till the mid-late 70s. The first dude to do it worked for Ocean Spray, and he actually ended up making so much money because of how much money Ocean Spray saved the first year they introduced it, that he took his bonus, just his bonus, and bought a ranch. It was either in Montana or Wyoming. I remember listening to this guy. I was a weird kid. I listened to like 2020 when I was in high school. I remember listening to a story about this, and he called it the Sugar Ranch. They named it the Sugar Ranch. So we have problems beyond. And all I'm saying is you don't have to be a purist carnivore. You don't even have to be a purist ketovore to get benefits from this. If most Americans, and this is not net carbs, okay? This is not net carbs. This is total carbs, no math. If they would limit their intake of carbohydrate to no more than 100 carbs a day, and if you start counting, you'll see that's way more than you really need if you're going to go to a diet that's heavy on meat and fat, right? You're not going to eat that much. You're just naturally not going to do it. But you have to add something to it. No processed foods, like no highly processed foods, no multisyllabic words. If you want bread, bake your fucking bread and know what goes in the bread. Use organic flour, right? Follow grandma's recipe and don't eat bread that has 37 ingredients in it because there's no need to put 37 ingredients in bread. If you're going to eat potatoes, then go get a fucking potato and cut it up and do whatever you're going to do with it. Do not go get a freaking potato chip with 19 ingredients in a potato chip. You know what the ingredients in a potato chip should be? A potato and some sort of fat like tallow or chicken schmaltz, even olive oil. Right? That's what goes, and salt. Maybe some pepper or some herbs if you want to flavor it. When you have like monosodium dihydramated asshole infused bullshit in it, and then you say, why are we sick as a society? That's why. So that's my ad on there. Now I want to do my segment on podcasting. And this is for everybody out there. And we'll break that into two groups, podcasters and general audience. For podcasters, it's advice for you, and for everybody else, it's so you know what's really going on with all these giant, huge podcast shows now. All right, so I am doing my anchor segment for the Expert Council show today, both in the audio and as a live stream. And it was an unannounced live stream. If you're like, Jack's live at like 11 o'clock and it said 12:30 or something, I just, whatever it defaulted to in StreamYard, I just thought people might want to have this as a break-off, one-off segment, especially if you know somebody who is a podcaster trying to build their podcast. They should know about what could potentially happen if they begin to develop traction and become successful. So the impetus for this is what just happened with Tim Pool, a very well-known, very successful podcaster, being named in a document from the DOJ about Russian election interference. And there's these fake Russian media companies, and you know, some of these influencers have signed contracts with them, and it's a fake media company. They're not fake, okay? They're not fake. They're Russian-owned, but they're not fake. The problem is much bigger than Russia, 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 which everybody wants to jump on. And I want to be very clear, the Tim Pool thing that has people buzzing right now a little bit on Twitter and shit, or X, or whatever the hell they want to call it, is the reason for this discussion, because it's fresh in the open right now, and it's a teachable moment, but I am not picking on Tim Pool. I'm going to say some things about how this all works, and you might be like, well, that's negative for Tim. That's up to you to decide. I have no axe to grind with Tim Pool as a person. But I also know how you get where Tim Pool is as fast as you can, or as he did in this game. I know how you end up with a giant staff taking care of all your shit for you. And I know that it's not the organic thing that it's tried to be painted as. So I've been doing this 16 years. I've never had a huge social media presence. I have like 20,000 followers on X. I've got, like, I don't know what's on Facebook because I ain't used it in 5 years. Like 60,000 plus subs on YouTube, but that's nothing in this game, right? That's because I don't play the game. But I've been successful. I'm successful enough that when we look at download logs of my audio side, which goes out, you know, everything from Spotify to iTunes and over 200,000 downloads an episode is an average, okay? And I started out in 2008 with exactly one person listening, me, myself, and I. And over the time of doing this, and just for the people on the live stream, I'm really not going to interact today. This is going to be like a 10-15 minute segment and out. I always like to interact with you guys, but again, I'm doing this for a reason that I'm putting it in a live video as well. I have been approached many times about getting involved in different levels of being networked with other people. So I want to start off with the most benign one and why I've always said no to it. The most benign one is a bunch of real podcasters who really are podcasters, and they're all themed in like self-sufficiency and reliance and prepping get together. So we're going to do the Prepper Podcasting Network or whatever. And then they just go out and try to get all of the best shows, and they ask you to join. And it's an honor when they ask you to join. And this is how I've always done that. If you ask me for absolutely nothing other than to syndicate my content, go forth and do so. And that's never what they want. They want the rights to, because they have to monetize what they're doing. And I understand, I'm just not going to do it. They want to be able to inject advertising from their sponsors into your network. And they want a commitment that you'll push the network versus your own show. I get why you're doing that. I don't have any problem with anybody doing that. But I don't need your help. And I bring more to the table than you bring to me when you ask me to do that. So I always go back to, if you want to syndicate my content, go ahead. The next one that is rather benign, there's a lot of independent producers out there that do radio show networks, and they have blocks of time on lesser AM channels. So, you know, you wouldn't be in Dallas or Jacksonville or Philadelphia, but all of these, like, mid-tier cities, a lot of these AM stations, they sell their airspace that they don't have programming for. They'd rather sell the whole hour to somebody that wants to put a show on, then try to sell 16 minutes of advertising into that hour. It's just easier, so they sell these big blocks off. So these guys put these AM networks together, and they'll come to somebody like me, and they'll make an offer to put your show that you're already doing on the radio, and they get the advertising rights, but as clear, concise breaks from your show, so they're not injecting an ad that somebody mistakes. Like, it's like when you listen to Drive Time Radio, if you still do on AM radio, and all of a sudden some ad comes on about foundation repair, AC repair. You don't say to yourself, oh, Jack is telling me to use A1 foundation repair. You're like, it is what it is. It's just an ad. So that's not a problem. But here's what they always want. They say, you don't have to do anything different except I need your show to be 44 minutes long. Exactly. And I need X number of, because they want to sell ads into the space, right? Or they'll say, you can buy the whole hour, and you buy it, and then we'll put it out for you. And both of those I say no to, because I don't want my show to have to be exactly 44 minutes long, and I don't want to have to tailor it. So I've always told those people, if you'd like to syndicate my content, as long as you don't take away from it, you can. And they never want to, because it won't fit. Those are both benign. I'm just unwilling to compromise my format to fit their needs, okay? So I have nothing negative. Now let's talk about the kind of shit that went on with these fake Russian media companies. And I'll say this. If they're fake media companies, so is fucking CNN and Fox News and everybody else that does the same shit in the same model. They just use the TV instead of the internet, okay? Like, they're all fake news. They're all fake media because they all have agendas that they're driving, which is why they're not real podcasts. And even real podcasts, when they go in there, they stop being real podcasts. Oh, it's in the format of a podcast. You can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or even Fountain 2.0. They're not podcasts. They're now media productions, right? And when they say they have disagreements between, like, the mainstream media and alternative podcast media, and every fucking talking head on Fox News and CNN has a podcast to go along with their show, you already should understand that that's bullshit. But what they are is amplifiers for each other. That's why you see a Tim Pool or Adam Carolla or whatever all the time on these mainstream media outlets that supposedly are competing with them. It's like this. Imagine you go to a concert, you know, rock concert out in the field, you know, and they got all these big bank of speakers. There's Fox News, CNN, MSNBC. And your podcaster is your lead guitarist. And supposedly the lead guitarist disagrees with the speakers because they're just amplifying each other. So let me tell you what an offer to join one of these. And it's, I don't care that it's Russia, Russia, Russia. Let me say this again. It doesn't matter that this particular deal was made between a Russian media company and Tim Pool's organization, okay? Doesn't matter. I've had offers like this from companies that I won't name, but they operate right here in the United States. They come to you and they say, you know, we've paid attention to what you're doing, and you seem to be naturally talented at this. But look at you. Look at your background, Jack. You got a friggin' agorist flag for a background? You're podcasting with a cheap microphone for $100 and a webcam? You do all your own editing? Imagine what you could do if you were free of all that. What if you had a proper set with perfect lighting? What if all you had to do was show up and do your show? And somebody else would do all your editing and all your research and book all your guests and make sure that everything works? What if you had co-hosts? What if you had multiple camera angles? I don't want to do it. You won't have to. That's the beauty of this. And here's the other thing. You know, we kind of looked into you and we kind of figured out, you know, that you're making pretty good money. But if you can disclose to us the exact amount you're making per year, what we'll do is we'll give you all this, and then we'll guarantee you your earnings in your first year will be 5 times what you're currently earning. We'll guarantee you in your second year that your earnings will be at least 10x what you're currently earning. And from that point forward, this is your percentage of the total revenue the show takes in that you will get, regardless of these expenses over here that we'll cover for you. So this is based on a pure gross revenue take in, and then you'll get this small percentage of that plus your guarantee as a salary. Now, if you're a podcaster and you're struggling to make it, this sounds too good to be true. And it is, because here's the other side of it. This is how that works. We're going to book all your guests. You know what that means? Well, we're going to tell you who you're talking to this week. And by the way, we're going to get you guests you'll never get on your own. Or maybe you'll get a guest like this once or twice or 3 times a year. We'll get you some guests like this every freaking week. If you want to do 5 shows a week, we'll give you a great guest 5 days a week. You don't have to talk to them or whatever. We'll give you a brief. All you got to do is look at it. We'll give you setup questions for them, and you just interview them. Oh, by the way, you get complete creative license. You're not giving up anything, Jack. If you want to tell the person you think they're a fucking ass clown, you go ahead and you tell them they're a fucking ass clown, right? You want to tell us that you think this guest is stupid, you can tell your audience. But you know what you are going to do? You're going to do the interview. Okay, wait a minute. So I have to take the guests you give me, you know? Well, you know, if there's a real problem with one particular guest here and there, we can talk about that. But overall, yeah, we're just going to set them up for you and you interview them. Just like, well, TV. Just like Fox News. You think fucking, you know, Laura Ingraham is out picking her fucking guests on Fox News? Or you think somebody say, Laura, this week you're interviewing these people on this day? That's what they do. So what then happens? Supposedly you have complete editorial control, but you do get final say on how everything's packaged, but you get no say on the ingredients. It's like telling somebody, here's flour, salt, and water, make anything you want out of it. Well, let me tell you what happens next, because you see this on my show all the time. I do a show on current events. What happens to the viewer count on a live stream on YouTube? It goes up through the fucking roof. If I start talking about the election, the economy, some bullshit going on in the news, the pandemic, whatever, woof! And then the next day I want to do a show on how to put together a food club. I don't want somebody vetted by a fucking talent agency. I want a person that actually fucking did it in Chattanooga, Tennessee, to tell you how you can go do it too. Oh, no, we don't have time for that because you're interviewing this fucking politician. Or you're interviewing this hot viral girl that talked about spitting on a dick. And you're doing it. And here's your contract that says you're doing it, that comes along with the money we're paying you to do it. And God, it would suck if we had to terminate that contract, Jack, and all these people that work for you now didn't get a salary anymore. But go ahead and go it alone and see if you can get back to where we've put you. This is the fucking deal with the devil. This is the deal with the devil. In the words of Aaron Lewis, I sold my soul to the devil in L.A. It's the same deal. You might as well just go try to break into mainstream media. It's all it is a migration of mainstream media into what we think of as alternative media. And all of these people that explode overnight, and they go from like one guy with a microphone, and I'm a real journalist, and all of a sudden they have like 8 people that are part of their show. I'm one of the most successful independent podcasters you can find. I'm not saying that to be egotistical. I'm just making a point. I can't afford that. And if I brought that many people in, not only would it fuck up what I have, I would have to, even without them, I would have to make the same kind of compromises to support all those people. Okay? Very few people can pull this off organically. I'll tell you who can. Adam Curry. Because he started the whole damn thing and he had the power of recognition from the very beginning. And he's developed a way with an audience that makes mine look tiny to figure out how to pay everybody out of production from the show. He's honestly the only one I know. I know people are like, Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan sold his whole soul to Spotify. Now, he had enough. He also came out of mainstream media. He had enough clout rate from the beginning that he got probably the best. I'm going to tell you right now, if Spotify came to me and said, the only thing we want you to do is agree to make your content exclusively available on Spotify, but here's $50 million, everybody has a point where they're like, oh, I see. And if the deal that he has really is the deal that it looks like he has, I'd probably be like, hi, welcome to the Survival Podcast, exclusively available on Spotify. If I can still have the person from Tennessee come tell you how to start a food club and work right in front of the government and not have them be able to touch you, I'd have to have, but I'd consider that. But this shit and all of these podcasts, I'm telling you, the ones with, you know, a bunch of stupid strippers talking, all of it. All of these come from these media companies. All of these media deals get made the same way, and you do lose control. And so I don't care at all. I don't care a mouse fart that Tim Pool's media company was owned by a Russian consortium. I don't give a shit. I want you to know this is how this dirty-ass game is played, and this is why you cannot trust content that is created that way. It cannot be trusted. The minute you see, like, when you see somebody pretend to be Joe Rogan that isn't Joe Rogan, you know that's what happened. You know that's what happened, because I'm going to tell you something. How do you do a show for 16 years independently? You have to make money. You have to make money, or you can't do it, okay? And no one does something consistently across time unless they don't need money and they love it, like a person that goes fishing every afternoon, okay, like a hobby, or they make money, or they stop doing it. So when you see these people with the staff, and somehow this, you know, organic staff has the ability to be in that studio and fuck off with your hour and a half podcast and you're done, like the prep, makeup, all that shit, like all of a sudden it's a full-time job. No one does that for free, nor should they. But when you go into that space, that's what you're doing. And I'm going to tell you, how many times have I had these offers? Straight up like the way I described it. We're a company. This is what we do. Here's what we'll do for you. We will make it happen. We will make you a bigger success than you can possibly comprehend. Three. Had a hell of a lot more of the stuff I started out with. Come be on AM radio, be in our network, whatever. And again, that's all benign. I'm just unwilling to bend to fit. And I've always said, if you want the content, as long as I get full attribution and you don't infer that I'm endorsing something I'm not, go ahead. And it almost never happens, okay? But that's benign. But these are sleazy offers. If you think about Oliver Anthony, and when the big music companies went, we'll give you 8 tour buses and all, that's the same shit. It's the same shit, and how do you say no? When you really realize what this could mean to change your life, how do you say no? I'll tell you who says no. Someone who loves what they do so much and does well enough with it to never be needy will say no. Because I am so grateful for this audience. I am so grateful for this business that I have and this community that I built that I cannot sacrifice it, because it would be like murdering a child of my own. Because if you're a real podcaster, and I mean a real podcaster, and you build something that was nothing one day and a little thing the next day and grows into its own thing and eventually begins to develop in ways you don't even control anymore, because your community on Telegram created a sub-community, they created a sub-community, and you're hearing back 3 years later about somebody whose life changed because of what you did, and you didn't even know that they were connected. They didn't know they were connected to you. They had to backtrack and figure it all out. That's like when your kid grows up, goes off to college, and doesn't come home like a freaking retard talking about white privilege, but comes home and talks about how they just got a job working for some company developing this new technology. And you're like, oh my God, my child has grown into a man or a woman, and they're making things happen on their own. That's what a podcast is for a real podcaster. And if you're listening to somebody that doesn't feel that way, there's only two possibilities. They haven't gotten there yet, so they don't understand it because their kid is still in diapers, and it's still puking on their shoulder, and it's still shitting its pants, and it's still getting them up at 3 o'clock in the morning, because it's exactly how I started. 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, coming down the stairs, doing show notes to do a show in my car. Okay? It's exactly like raising an infant. It needs your attention constantly. So they're either in that stage, and they just haven't got there yet, or they're not real. Anyway, that's that. If you want to catch the rest of today's show, it is episode 3,553. So I ain't bullshitting you. I've been doing this a while, and you should check out the show because we have some amazing expert counsel segments for you today. And with that, if you want to share that segment, there will be a link to it, probably an embedded video in today's show. For the live stream that I just wrapped up, we're now back to audio only. I hope you realize that everything I said, I really meant there at the end. I really didn't plan on it going 20 minutes. That often happens to me, or 19 minutes or whatever it was. But that end piece just kind of happened organically. And it is that potential for things to happen that way where I will never give up what I have. And I'll recommend to you, if you're building something like this, if your baby is in diapers and waking you up and puking on you and shit its pants, keep working on that baby, because it will become a toddler, and then it will learn to walk, and then it will learn to run, and then it will become more than you can imagine. But the minute you make the deal, you're letting your enemy raise your child. In the words of Malcolm X, only a fool would send his child to his enemy to be educated. And that's what you're doing. You're not just letting your enemy educate your child. You're letting your enemy raise and control and decide the future of your child if you're a podcaster that lets these companies come in and get their hooks into you. If they were as good as they say at what they do, they wouldn't need you. They would do it on their own. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I want to remind you guys that you can help support the show doing your online shopping at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is the same one we've had all week. It is the Vivor Rechargeable Light. This thing is awesome. It's under $20. If you buy two or more of them, one of my listeners told me that you will get another 5% off, and then you can use my code and get another 5% off. So you can stack those discounts and get a total of 10% off. I didn't bring these around this week. Brought them around last week. They're both still on sale. Vivor's galvanized raised garden beds are awesome. You cannot build a board out of pressure treated lumber for what you can get these for. And the Frigidaire portable ice maker available on Amazon. That thing is awesome. It's still on sale for like $87. Links to all of those are in the show notes and will be in the Daily Mail. I want to remind you, if you get on the Daily Mail, you will not miss anything like that awesome plasma cutter that I put up, not yesterday, but Tuesday, because I didn't find out about it until after the live stream was over. I didn't get to put it on the show. By the next day, it wasn't around anymore. It's a freaking $200-plus plasma cutter for $100. Are you kidding me? I did it as a deal of the day alert. About 40 of y'all got it. The people that got it are the ones that follow me on social and are on TG or Daily Mail. And you can get on the Daily Mail. How? Go to the survivalpodcast.com and click on Daily Mail and just fill it out. I won't spam you. Did you hear what I just said about being an independent podcaster? I don't give away your information. Are you kidding me? The most closely guarded thing I have, the most valuable thing I have, is the contact data for my people. That's why, because I don't trust social media. I don't trust anybody else. And that means you can trust. The person that doesn't trust any third party is the one you can probably trust to be your connection to them. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. Thank you for tuning in today. If you're not an MSB member, please consider becoming one. That is how I have remained as independent as I have over the years, and I don't worry about paying bills, so I can do whatever I want which means I can actually give you the truth even if you don't want to hear it, which I think is a big reason a lot of y'all tune in. Thank you so much to all of you. A very, very heartfelt thanks for 16-plus years now of helping me do what I love and doing it independently. I'll catch you tomorrow with a Friday flashback. We'll go back to those early days and some of our interviews, and then we shall do it all over again starting next week.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you. Revolution.